questions just to try to give you some guidance and a bit of a framework. And those should have been distributed. If you did not get those, they're on the back table. And let me also just mention that there are some CDs on the back table. Those CDs have all of the resources that CCSP has produced, including the synthesis and assessment product that Chris mentioned. There is a sign-up sheet on the back table also, so if we run out of CDs, just write on the sign-up sheet that you want the CD, and we will get you those materials. And if you want more communication, more emails from CCSP, also just be sure to write your contact information on that sign-up sheet. So let me just briefly go over these questions. These are not, again, intended to be the only thing that we can talk about. They're just sort of they're intended to start to initiate the discussion. What are the major climate-related challenges that we face as public health professionals and researchers that deal with the health effects of climate change? How can climate change science and information that supports decisions be better provided? How can public health research and practices better inform climate change planning and response? And are there training needs or tools that could better assist all of us in protecting the public's health from impacts related to climate change? What are the roles and responsibilities of the federal government in climate science and information provision? All right, so again, these are just sort of a baseline to help start the discussion. And this is really intended to be a listening session, so meaning we're here to listen to you. We will be happy to have as much of a dialogue and back and forth exchange as you like, but this is really your chance to tell us how you would like to see the federal government, whether it's form or function, deal with the issue of climate change and human health. Are there any questions? Yes, Brenda. I don't know. Are there more?
Mm-hmm. We can share up here.
So, and just so you know, Tanya Moslick, who's sitting up here in the front, second row, works for CCSP, and she'll be taking notes. And as long as the slides are on, this is recorded. So we will gather your input and make use of it. John. I would agree. I've actually never heard a better set of 5-minute presentations. Maybe that's some learning for the future. But no.
I'm sure that some similar frameworks have been presented to the CCSP, but I've never seen actually any agency produce anything that looked like that as a strategy. For, you know, that was as comprehensive. You know, where is, nobody's looking at monitoring the surveillance of climate change that I know of within the CCSP. The EPA, about 10 years ago, kind of laid out a framework and a strategic plan and a timeline, and they've been following that as the budget has been sliced and diced. So I guess the question, I guess my comment is that this is a nice, really nice layout, and you know, I think it's a great starting place, and I just wonder, where is the response going to come from? Who is the CCSP that's going to look at this? I mean, it's the representative, what's the process, I guess, for
okay. Just with respect to your comment about monitoring and products and activities that CCSP is currently engaged in, you know, a lot of these other 21 synthesis and assessment products do deal with monitoring and modeling and a lot of, as we've all alluded to, the physical science aspects of climate change. But looking forward, I think, is really your question about how do we make use of what was said earlier or what you'll give us now. So CCSP is engaged in this strategic planning process that I mentioned. All of these federal agencies are part of these listening sessions across the country between now and December to listen and take in input from the multiple audiences engaged in climate change research. We are, you know, forming what we call, I think, building blocks. How is it that we want to reshape CCSP? How is it that we want to rethink what CCSP should be engaged in? Personally, I would say there will be a lot more emphasis on impacts, adaptation, and mitigation, you know, which is getting to be a bit of a theme here, and probably less on the physical science of climate change, which doesn't, and I don't mean to devalue that, you know, but I think there has been a lot of attention and funding directed toward that, and less toward impacts, adaptation, mitigation. So CCSP in its current state, its current form, will be working to develop some plans for going forward and presenting those to the transition team, whichever one there is. And I think there will be, as I think it was maybe Howie mentioned, probably some changes in how CCSP is structured, and that there will be at that point, you know, probably next spring, more specific planning across the federal government for what CCSP should be and what it should try to concentrate on in the coming years, and that's when you would see a more specific plan take shape, I would think. Did that address your question? Okay. And if somebody else wants to, right.
Yeah, thank you for the comments on it, and especially for the compliment on the 4 or 5 minute presentations that miraculously took 45 minutes to deliver. I want to assure you that the HHS representatives on the CCSP have been emphatically pushing the health perspective in the last year or two. It's not always clear that it sticks. In an audience of geologists and atmospheric scientists, health can feel like a fringe special interest. And so it's not always clear that this sticks. Am I hearing from your comment a suggestion or recommendation to the HHS representatives that they should collect all of this information and ask to make a special presentation on health to the CCSP?
I second.
You might be reading that into what he said.
That's part of the answer to the question is why hasn't it happened? It's that the voice, although it's maybe focused and saying the right things, is a bit small. So yes, I think that any opportunity that you can have to get more volume and focus on
this. So and Chris wanted to speak to this as well.
And me too.
Okay.
Jonathan's going to be next. Can you hear me? My voice is on the carrier.
Watch it.
No.
You
can. People in the back don't.
To sort of broaden out what you're saying, John, that what we're talking about here is challenging how many agencies, except for CDC, are organized and how they think about issues. And so this is we're requiring agencies to think very differently about their mandates. If you think of any of the environmental health issues, for example, if you think of lead exposure, it's a very linear, fairly linear process from thinking about the lead exposure to looking at who's at risk to trying to mitigate that risk. And you heard from Paul specifically that in this area, because of the large-scale changes that climate change is causing, that if you look at this from the lens of the outcome and where you're going to see problems, you end up with very different kinds of thinking about what kinds of research you need to do and what actions you're going to take. And yet the agencies aren't structured that way, and CCSP has not been structured that way. And so they really are thinking a very linear, we've got an exposure from which I can tell you what the impact will be. And you've heard from Jonathan, maybe you can, maybe you can't. And once I know the impact, then it's very clear what the action is. But in this case, if you want to talk in terms of exposure-response relationships and going back to lead, the exposure-response relationship for lead does not significantly vary from one place to another. How many cigarettes I smoke in a lifetime is not, there's not a lot of variability then in the kinds of outcomes I would see. Huge variability with climate change because of the local environment, the local context is so important. And so I think that is also one of the struggles. It's not just that health is seen as marginal, but it's also that we're asking them to do something very different and think differently than what they have in the past. And there's been a lot of talk in this conference about communication, and I think we need to think about how we can communicate more clearly this need back to the agencies that don't think that way.
And along the same lines, very quickly, I'd like to ask you, Alan, and Howie, as the health representatives on the CCSP, what can we do to help out, and who do we need to communicate to? Because I think, as Chris said, it's been very much linear, climate science fed to agriculture and water, fed to health. Public health is sort of at the bottom when actually, you know, we're a very selfish species. We really only care about water and, well, we care about biodiversity for several reasons, but we care about water and agriculture because it affects us. And so we are, you know, at the furthest downstream, but we are the priority in this whole research enterprise. And it's been echoed already today that the CCSP program has focused so much on, let's get those climate projections better, let's get the resolution higher, you know, research, more research on climate science. And we've been echoing this need for looking at the impacts, and we need to really put money into figuring out what are the thresholds and sensitivities, because we don't know those very much. So is there something that we can do to sort of flip that pyramid over to say, look, public health is central to climate change, and we need to, you know, set this priority that really what we care about is all these things that affect us as a species. That's where more of the research should go. Because I can tell you right now, we do forecast climate models and whatever, but the bottom line is, you know, there's uncertainty. And all I need is a scenario of what if it was 1 degree warmer? What if it was 10% increase in rainfall? What would that mean, regardless of what the real forecast is? We don't know those answers. We have to do that research first before we can ask the climatologist, you know, what's the future going to be like? So is there something that we can do to facilitate you guys having a higher platform in this whole institution?
Yeah, I'm really impressed at what a good job we're doing listening, I think. As we said earlier, the driving forces at the CCSP are those of the individual component agencies. The CCSP itself doesn't so much define its direction as it represents the collective direction of the member agencies. And an agency that has lots of resources and people working on an area has a large voice at the CCSP table, and an agency whose activities are relatively small has its moral authority but not such a big voice. So the way to raise the profile of health is going to be to strengthen the health-related activities of the health-related agencies. Agency agendas are set two ways. Agencies are part of the executive branch, but they take direction and get their funding from the legislative branch. So if the executive branch directs its agencies, such as HHS, to do more on climate change, we will do more on climate change. If the legislative branch directs us through laws and or appropriations to do more on climate change, we will do more on climate change. At CDC, we're doing all we possibly can now without any resources, and so that limits what we can do. But I think that the levers for people in this room to pull are going to be contacts with the executive branch and the legislative branch, and it would be directions from those two masters that would enhance the activity of our agencies that would then enhance our profile at CCSP.
Right, so I would agree. You can help educate your elected officials. And let me just say one other thing with respect, and now we should stop talking, to John's question, because it also relates to the previous question about models or form of CCSP. So I do this not only for climate change, but I am on a similar federal interagency coordinating committee for ocean science and technology. And it's actually done a much better job of planning and supporting and coordinating across the federal government with ocean science and technology, which is actually related to climate change. Partly because it started with the, if you went back to these goals, these are really the so-called strategic goals of CCSP. But when we did this just in the last 2 or 3 years for ocean science and technology, we started with the question of what should be the societal benefits for the federal government investments in ocean science and technology. We identified 6 societal benefits. One of those is enhancing human health. So this is what's missing with CCSP. There is no broader perspective of what is the purpose of the federal government's investment in climate change research. So NIH, for example, reports to the Office of Management and Budget that it invests about $50 million in human health effects of climate change research. And depending on how you analyze the NIH portfolio, that number can go up to $160 million. That's a lot of money already. So what is it that all of us, get for those taxpayer dollars in climate change and health effects research? How could we better manage that? How could we better promote the visibility and the presence of health within the climate change infrastructure in the federal government? So that's what we're here asking you to help us out with. We will stop talking so much. Yes.
I'll just say, Chris and I were on the national assessment, and Hallie reviewed it, and we qualitatively have a general sense. But for example, sea level rise and storm surges will be more important in the Gulf states. Heat waves, probably in the Midwest, and there's some different places in the country where we have very general idea. Where you have the problems of air pollution and ozone today, those are places. In fact, there was a study out of California showing that it will disproportionately increase ozone levels in California because you've got such bad ozone levels now. And so there are some first guesses generally like that. But as far as identifying, saying hotspot, not exactly.
It goes to the problem that Alan just talked about of, in fact, the total research budget from the federal government on climate change and health is very, very small. And, in fact, most of the money that Alan was talking about that's reported to CCSP is on UV radiation. It's on UV as a mutagen. And so the bulk of that money actually doesn't go to climate change and health research. And if you look through Synthesis and Assessment Product 4.6, we don't have that rich of a database. And if you look through, for example, we've gone through and looked at all of the references we cited, and only one paper says that NIH was a partial funder of any of that research. And that's a requirement, of course, of NIH funding. And that person listed a long list of funders. So we do have a real problem because people are coming back to us and saying those, asking us those questions. And using expert judgment, we can tell you with some degree of assurance, but we haven't actually done the research to provide that kind of detailed response.
Is that a gentleman on the aisle?
Yeah, I'm from the local health department, physician health officer in Northern California. And what I'd like to ask CCSP to do is develop a standard methodology that we can use at the local and regional level to quantify existing and future human health impacts of greenhouse gas with various assumptions. I don't want you to do the work for our locals, but I want you to set up the method. thing is already an impact, but we're not very, there was some information yesterday communicating climate change. I've said that only 18% of Americans think that climate change is hurting people now. And Tom Brown talked about people really care related to climate change if it affects food, their food, water, shelters, or perhaps animal extinctions. So we have to show people that it's hurting people now in our region. In California, in my region, we've had heat waves, we've had a heat death. We don't attribute it to greenhouse gas. So I want you to come up with a methodology that I can have an attributable fraction of heat wave, of wildfire impact that's due to greenhouse gas. We do attributable fraction in public health all the time for cancer risks and everything else. Let's start doing that for greenhouse gas. Let's do it now for the existing impact, and let's have a standard methodology to project in the future. It was also mentioned yesterday by Tom Brown that we don't have standard. Are we talking degrees centigrade, degrees Fahrenheit? Are we talking CO2 or CO2 equivalent with the other methane and other gases? You know, we're not talking baselines the same, 1990, 2000. Let's get a standard methodology for assessing the human health impact of now, greenhouse gas, and in the future, based on various scenarios and assumptions, whether we have smart growth development in the future or we don't. Let's have a standard methodology to predict that out. That's my request
for
CCSP.
Howard.
Just to clarify that, I heard you ask for the government to develop standard methodologies for assessing burden now and projecting burden in the future. Would you also ask for training and capacity building so that your staff...
Well, you'll probably have to have sophisticated versions for the universities and metropolitan areas, and you're going to have to scale down the standard indicator set, ballpark kind of
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if you're asking for methods development, are you also asking that those methods be conveyed along with training and how to use them to end users like your staff?
Right. So I think that implies that you'd have to have the infrastructure and the resources and the workforce to carry that out. Yes.
Processes that would help understand the human health effect. So the development of public health indicators, more resources for states to be able to develop that. As states are being tasked with developing climate change action plans or preparedness plans, I think that would be really important. And public health indicators can be a way to augment that.
Yes.
Excuse me. I'm Bob Gould with Physicians for Social Responsibility and the Peace Caucus. Hearing a lot of the comments here about limitations of resources on a wide variety of planes here, I guess I want to just raise the elephant in the room question. We're facing now, as a country, a convergence of major fiscal crisis with what has been termed by Joseph Stiglitz and Linda Vilmes as the $3 trillion war. And a report that was released by the Institute of Policy Studies early in the year indicated that total monies of dealing with climate security, if you will, is fully 1% of those monies that are allocated to traditional security, meaning the military budget, which protects both highly polluting technologies as well as access to the fossil fuels that are screwing everything up. So one of the presidential candidates has indicated that he's fully attuned to what the impacts of these fiscal constraints are, but that would want to maintain and possibly invest more in things that are really essential along these lines. So I guess my larger question to you all is, what would be your role, or what would you see the responsibilities of the various agencies to be able to put out that these are really needed, that we should not be looking at a constrained pie in terms of doing all the important things that we need? Because I think that's really on the table.
And I think that this gets to the co-benefits issue, and it gets to the fact that, the way we are living right now is unsustainable as far as resources. It's very resource intense. and that this economic crisis in itself could be an opportunity where it actually forces us to redirect faster than we would normally. Now, you know, as far as looking for more research dollars to do climate assessments, I think there's some problems there. But as far as, you know, a shock to the country to say, you know, why are we in this hotel that's burning up all this energy when we don't have to be? We're you know, there are win-win situations, and maybe that's the silver lining. Maybe we're going to just have a shock. I'm optimistic about it, but as far as in this current funding situation, I'm not going to be looking for any research grants out of federal agencies on climate change necessarily for a couple, maybe at least 9 months, right? Give you guys 9 months.
Yeah, thanks.
To recover. But no, that's a. But I do think there could be an opportunity in this sort of crisis situation.
Yeah, Chris.
Three responses. The first is, if you take the current administration's budget numbers for how much is being spent on climate change, that includes all of our satellites, and includes two NOAA labs that would exist anyway. And so the budget number does not reflect actually what goes into actual trying to understand and deal with the issue. A second issue, you mentioned security. The security community is very engaged on climate change and is holding a whole series of meetings. They've written briefings. They held climate change war games this summer. And so I would expect to see them play a much larger role, because they see that climate change is really affecting what they view as their responsibility. And the third is, I live in Washington, D.C., and there's also a whole group of people who've come to the place where they're saying, country's borrowed so much money, what's a little bit more? And so it's hard to know exactly how that's going to play out, but at some point the numbers have become so large, and so many people in Congress view climate change as such a critical issue that they're saying, if the country's going to borrow this much, it makes sense to borrow a little bit more, because we've got such severe problems facing us. And one doesn't know how that balance is going to change, but there is that possibility.
Did you want to say something?
Well, just again, on Dr. Gould's comment, we didn't really highlight this because we're looking at more, you know, more direct and indirect impacts of climate change on the U.S., but really an indirect impact is, you know, we did talk about this this issue of the propensity for more worldwide conflict over drought, and so that's going to affect, how is that going to affect the military budget? And then when the military budget goes up again, there's direct impacts on the health of Americans. So I think that goes back to this communication issue again. I think that needs to be, you know, all these interconnections need to be really, you know, transparent and visible to the American public. So we need to be, you know, looking at this dynamic and not just and seeing how it's all connected and try to stop it at its source. So.
Right. And so the last thing I would say with respect to funding is that it would not hurt us to think more creatively about how to stimulate more interest in funding climate change and human health research. There are a lot of bills circulating in Congress that deal with one aspect or another of climate change. Health is hardly ever, if ever, mentioned in those bills. There is a transportation bill up in Congress next year. It is $70 billion a year for 5 years. That's a B, billion. You know, that's more than twice the total NIH budget. Transportation is obviously pretty connected to everything we're talking about here. Energy alternatives, built environment, effects on the climate. Transportation has lots of effects on human health. So APHA, other groups are trying to infuse some health considerations within that. But again, all of you are free to help educate your elected representatives. Yes?
Certainly, if Barack Obama is elected, and perhaps with a cane, but with Obama, that the issues of of alternative energy types of programs is what he's laid out as one of the three major initiatives that would receive priorities even in a poor funding type situation. So the comments about looking at the impacts and co-benefits of mitigation related to that, because it's going to be a big program, and I think it's very possible that the health impacts that might occur out of this overall thing may be, like you said, potentially overwhelmed by adverse, unintended consequences of some of those programs that they may be trying to implement. And I think getting in at the ground level and having programs in place to monitor it, and using sort of the example of the Green Chemistry Initiative in California, really thinking of cradle-to-grave type of approaches towards whatever decisions are being made in terms of implementing technologies and other things, so that you're really dealing with those at the beginning, and we're not sitting here 30 years from now saying, oh my God, what did we do? So I think that's got to be actually a really major part of it. I think with regard to adaptation, that the framework that was mentioned earlier, and I was really impressed by one of Chris's comments that you kind of just passed over, but that it looks like people are actually kind of migrating to areas of higher vulnerability and things like that. I think there's got to be a lot of attention on the adaptation to the notion that, in fact, one of the fundamental problems here is that there are going to be unequal impacts across the population. There's going to be vulnerable populations. There's also going to be people who are going to be trying to externalize the cost of their decisions in terms of where people build developments along coastal things or out into places we see all the time in California, where they're fighting to save multi-million dollar houses that have been built out, you know, in the marginal areas of urban areas. So I think there's going to be a lot of issues that I think have to do with equity distributions of risk and mitigation. And I will say, in terms of health and human services, one of the concerns, because I think the big issue is a mandate to health and human services to put more on the table in terms of research. But if it follows the traditional approach, then vulnerability is going to be defined in terms of genetics and epigenetics and other things like that, whereas I think a lot of the unequal impacts here really are socially determined. And so there really needs to be a mandate, not only for more research, but more research that looks at the real sort of social ecological systems of what leads to vulnerable populations and disproportionate impact. So it's not just more money, but more money done in what I'd say the right way. Other people might disagree, but in a way that really looks at what leads to disproportionate impacts with regard to adaptation.
I'd like to think that's important.
I don't work for a federal agency, so I can help put words in Dean's mouth. And I strongly support what you say, and this is a place where people in this room and APHA can have a role, because it wasn't that many years ago I was in a meeting with DOE talking about carbon capture and storage, which they have been putting probably close to hundreds of millions of dollars into now. And the issue about the possible health impacts, because there are very clear possible health impacts from carbon capture and storage, was raised. And the then head of DOE said, don't worry about it, we'll make sure it's safe. I was sitting next to folks from EPA who did not feel reassured, because DOE does not have a fantastic track record on ensuring that indeed technologies are safe. And we've talked about health impacts assessment, and this can be a recommendation back to CCSP that health impact assessments be mandated as part of the development of any new technology, because otherwise that money is going to go straight to DOE and may or may not have any serious health consideration. And then people like Howie is going to be scrambling to find 10 cents to try and say what could the impacts be. Because it's not necessarily the technologies are wrong, it's that often the focus is too narrow, and that there may be additional work that needs to be done, like monitoring and surveillance, to ensure that they're safe before we have an accident.
Great point. Great.
Yes,
point.
Back.
I'm one of those EPA people who just want to point out that we have a brand new request for applications on effects, unintended consequences, et cetera, of carbon CO2 capture. Spread the word and look at
Yes, in the back row here.
Hi, I'm J.R. Maravich from ASCO. We represent the state and territory of health agencies. From sort of my perspective, from what I've seen, the hardest thing, or the most urgent thing for us from the state health department is to sort of try and lever themselves into the discussions with their counterparts at the state level. And, you know, I think state health departments are pretty good at doing communication strategies and advocacy and that sort of thing, but what's lacking at the moment is, you know, the local knowledge or the state information to actually lead yourself into those conversations. So the lack of modeling, metrics, human surveillance and stuff that would really give the state and territorial health departments some leverage to get into the conversation. So I would advocate if we can get some modeling and that sort of thing that could be applied at the state and territorial level.
Front row here.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Patrice Stepan. I just at our opening plenary, Dr. Marmot said that actually there is plenty of money, we're just spending it on the wrong thing. But I guess, I apologize, I wasn't here for the whole session, but it just seems, you know, you mentioned, Alan, that there's like kind of no goal statement, and I just wanted to pick up like in the sense of, you know, in terms of just enhancing human health and starting from that. And I guess for a research agenda, what I would like to see is kind of what we already know carried forward. So for example, Paul was saying that, you know, we can anticipate, you know, we'll have vector control problems. We already know a lot about human health and pesticides, but we kind of really don't need to study again. So could you set a research agenda that starts out with prevention, like we want, or a disparity? You know, kind of start out with the goal so we can carry forward hindsight and to not have to be kind of scrambling for, you know, arguments over applying pesticides for increase, you know, so we could just direct the research agenda based on what we know about prevention and going forward, as opposed to just kind of studying what's going to happen as if we don't know anything already. And disparities is another good example. We know we don't want to end up creating more disparities. In fact, we want the research to be directed to, that's the goal. So then what would you study if that's your goal?
Right. Yes, I would agree. Thank you for that input. So right here on the aisle.
U.S. National Assessment made a real effort to have stakeholder engagement. It was highly unequal across the sectors and across the regions, but there's a real effort to do so. It was a real lost opportunity in that there was no continuity of maintaining any kind of contact with those stakeholders. But there is an example. NOAA has for years been funding RISA programs, Regional Integrated Science for Assessment. And they've got 8, I think, RISA centers. Anybody here from NOAA? I think they've got 8. They've got 8?
Yeah.
So there's 8 RISA centers. Only one includes a health issue. And that's, it's not the largest of the health issues. It's Valley Fever. It's important for that particular region in Arizona. But it does make a real effort. There are centers of excellence, and there's a real effort to ensure that they have stakeholder engagement on the issues that they deal with. And so it's a wonderful program that could be recommended for because so much of what we're going to worry about with climate change is regionally based, of having some kind of regional centers of excellence from which we can address all of the issues, not just a short list of issues.
Right, and I think it's important for you to just keep saying to us that these inequities are something that we need to pay attention to. So I would expect that the CCSP listening session that's taking place today in Alaska, we'll hear from some native tribal communities. There is a conference in December that's being put on by West Harlem Environmental Action that NIEHS and some other agencies are helping to support that deals with climate change and social justice. So I think there's an awareness of this as a particular problem. We just need to keep ensuring that we focus on it.
Yeah, just real quickly on that, I'm working with the state of Alaska on their adaptation assessment, and the Health and Culture Technical Working Group is very well represented, and very heavy engagement from natives and the NGOs that work with them.
So we just have a few minutes. Is there someone who hasn't had an opportunity to make a comment or ask a question? Let me take this woman over here on the front.
I have a great comment. My name is Charlotte Seidman, and I'm from the American Journal of Preventive Medicine. And for the last year, I've been working with Howie and some of our panel members here on a very special issue to our journal, is inside of climate change and the health of the public. This is our November issue. It's just out. I brought six issues with me.
I'm an author. Can I get one?
Can we get one?
Authors over here. We did something really exciting with this, and for the first time, our journal provided audio podcasts for five of our articles, and now we and Chris were two of the people that were interviewed for the book. It is probably one of the most exciting things that we've done in a long time, and we're hoping once the elections are over, we can do another big PR push on this. But I did want to thank Howie personally for all the time that he's committed, unpaid volunteer time, to do this. I do have some copies of this if you'd like them.
Everybody be gentle with Charlotte as you pile on to get your copy.
Okay, right back here, the gentleman right here. Go ahead.
So I think a few of the things, I just want to touch on a few things that I'm sure weren't explicitly said, but many people would agree with. One would be building or strengthening our evidence base. And I'm actually trained more as a geographer climatologist, and actually a lot of the panelists themselves also conduct ecological, what we would call in public health ecological studies. And I think we need to strengthen that evidence base, whether it's case control or cohort studies. And I think that's a real opportunity for this, many of these people in this room. I'm just gonna run through many of the other, just very quickly, things like asthma, flu, allergies, dengue, neglected diseases, infrastructure, and underserved populations. Things that have varying amounts of research, but not a lot. And in many of those cases, they're only ecological. So I think that for a variety of reasons, whether it's convincing public health officials or decision makers, that strengthening that evidence base is something that could be great in. I'm not sure how to do that in terms of the structure. The second thing would be funding for interventions would be also something that I'd like, although we don't have a lot of money at the moment, but clearly once we have these clearly identified problems, we know our vulnerable risk groups, what do we do about it? Third is comorbidities, and I think that is oftentimes we've only looked at one disease or one health outcome in isolation, and this stretches across not just looking at what I call these non-traditional environmental health problems, but also senior traditional groups. And I think that would also involve broader public health community, whether that's lead poisoning, things that we just haven't had the resources to kind of relate, since I think there's a lot of multifactorial or multiple things going on in these underserved areas. And fourth is just to, that also includes push for capacity and surveillance and institution, building.
Okay, great. Those are all.
And Chris is also a co-author on that special issue, by the way.
I was just going to make a comment too, with someone who has a background in climatology. One of the research points I think that has to be made, these problems need to be solved you know, with interdisciplinary teams of scientists. So, you know, public health has to start communicating with, you know, climatologists, with the weather scientists, you know, infectious disease. It's such a broad range of issues that really needs to be put into this discussion too, that when these, you know, when proposals do come out, that, you know, it's not just, you know, one specialty. It has to be a team of different individuals.
And training needs to be like that too, as far as training graduate students to be able to cut across the disciplines and ask questions and be great teammates. We don't teach that very well, except for the, you know, NSF IGRT program. They try that, but we don't do that very well.
Right, so training was one of the questions, so I'm glad that at least got inserted. So there is another session here. We're going to have to stop. Why don't we do one more question? Why don't this? Okay, all right, so why don't we take this woman here on the aisle? Yeah. Okay. Okay, right, I would agree. That builds upon what was expressed before about having some common methodology and just baseline data to start with. Yes, it would even be any broader than that, yeah.
Are you, I'm not sure I understood your comment, you're suggesting that CCSP would guide government agencies in themselves going green?
Well, there's the mitigation aspect as well as them doing their own adaptation planning.
Okay.
If it applies to their work.
So you're talking about an operational role for CCSP in guiding
whether
agencies.
Whether it's DOI or TFP or DOE or DOE, they all have the need to do adaptation plans, whether it's for fish and wildlife,
right,
or reclamation, whatever it is, to incorporate climate change into their internal strategic plans, into their own operational plans, into their staffing. And that attributes to public health. How are we going to assess our public health agencies and our health system for readiness, preparedness planning, everything? There's just not any tools for planning available.
Okay, so John has one quick announcement.
I just want to let people know we have a climate change committee within APHA that starts in the Environment Center, but we are trying to broaden it. I'm going to coordinate comments on behalf of that committee to the CCSP, having taken notes today. Anybody who is interested in participating in this committee or in this process, please come.
So let me thank you all for your enthusiasm and interest for finding this room and getting up early. And let's thank the speakers once again. Thank you. Yeah, that was good. Thanks for sticking around.
Yeah, no problem.
That was actually pretty good.
Yeah, very lively.
I know it's a reasonable big turnout.
Hi, Dave. So
one of the questions I was going to ask is since we believe in surveillance and looking for sentinels, when Jonathan moved from Maryland to Wisconsin, I was going to say, well, I took that to be a yellow signal.
Exactly.
So if he moved to Canada, that would be losing.
He moves to the Rockies, then
that's
it's
right.
Yes,
that's right.
Good.
Really doing well.
Yeah, I was. You know, I think that the underfunding of HHS for this is really shameful. But
well,
on the other hand,
tried last year.
I was on an advisory committee for almost all of those national labs,
you know,
10, 15 years ago, and they decided to do a HVAC refit for one of their buildings. $1 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, so the other
right,
comment
it
that
is.
Came up at the end, which is it's such small chunk change if DOE or others
right.
incorporate some of this stuff into their programs, it just overwhelms whatever we want to help.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah, I was, you know, that's my connection.
Yeah.
Because it must be
frustrating
for you guys.
Well, right. Yes. Right. Yeah.
So how's your center going? Don't you have a center on this?
We don't really have a center on this. We have a center for occupational environmental health. But our campus is
like a lot of them. We have Barbara Finlayson, Fitz, and other people that do wonderful stuff in atmospheric chemistry. We have people in